Hello, and welcome to So You Think You Can Rule Persia, the podcast where we rate and review all the kings of Persia from Dayokis to Yazdegerd III. I'm Serial, and my pronouns are they-them.
And I'm Umberto, and my pronouns are he-him. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 63, Bahram II.
Ah, joy.
Yes, the second one of the Bahrams, not the last of the Bahrams. The last Bahram is a lot cooler.
Sadly, you know.
Yes. You'll get to him eventually, like towards the end of the podcast. But, you know, for now, you get this Bahram. So, yeah. Do you remember what happened last time, Serial? Any strong recollections?
I remember I had some issues.
Yes,
with,
that was the correct
with what was happening. Yeah. I remember my feelings being not happy.
Yes.
Yes. I remember, actually. Bahram I was the firstborn of our previous king, who was not on his list of worthy people to succeed him, and who then killed his very successful and very capable brother to usurp the throne, and then did a terrible job.
Allegedly.
And, you know, was killed after 3 years, and somehow managed to, like, f*** things up. Already, in the short time that he was...
He died naturally after 3 years, to be fair.
Oh, but, yes. Know. Thank Stop goodness. Happening. The gods were like, no.
Like, nope, you don't get to rule.
And well, there was a lot of it about, like, a lot of religion-related shenanigans that he implemented.
Yeah.
So
basically, the main thing that Bahram I did was, first of all, he alienated his brother Narsê, who was meant to succeed according to a certain faction,
mm-hmm.
and he made Narsê king of Armenia.
Right.
Which technically made him the heir, kind
but
of
like
theoretically implied.
Also, yeah, I was hoping today's episode would be him, but no, because he did then make his son his heir.
Yes.
And now we
exactly.
get to see what his brother thinks of all of that.
Yep. And the other thing that Bahram I did was give a lot more religious power over to Kartir, who is this Zoroastrian head priest, and this religious power was used to persecute Manichaeans, kill the prophet Mani, and persecute anybody who followed him, which is not great.
This is not what you want from things.
No. So, expectations for Bahram II, Serial. Long, prosperous reign, short, ignominious reign, long, crappy reign.
Well, I hope not that last one, because that would be, that would suck. If, like, this gets dragged out and we just get to feel alongside his uncle just the dread of it all.
Yeah, also his uncle is now in his late 50s, early 60s by this point.
Yeah, which is not great, because, like, is he going to succeed now? Because, like, then he's going to rule for, like, a year and then die.
I mean, that's what happened to his two brothers, to be fair. One ruled for 1 year and then died under mysterious circumstances, another died after 3 years. So, mysterious stuff is going on. Well, let's find out, then, what happens to Bahram II, and if he does anything good with his life. So, okay, let's start. Bahram II was son of Bahram I, and born in a wide range, somewhere between the 230s and the 250s. And of his youth, we only know that he may have had a younger brother called Hormizd.
Right.
So, that's an option. Who knows?
Like
his uncle, One thing that we do know is that in his youth, while growing up, Bahram became a close friend to our old buddy Kartir, the high priest. And Kartir acted as mentor of this Bahram, and when the time came, and in September 274 Bahram I died, Kartir made sure that Bahram II succeeded instead of Narsê, now king of Armenia.
Yep.
So being friendly with the religious establishment is being very helpful for this lineage of Bahrams. And well, in exchange for all this help and to thank his mentor. Mm-hmm. Early on, Bahram gave Kartir the official rank of noble, despite being a commoner, nominated him the savior of Bahram's soul, made him the supreme judge of the empire, so any court case goes through Kartir if he wants to. And Bahram also gave Kartir the traditional shrine that the Sassanid family had had since the beginning, possibly since Sasan himself, or definitely since Papak, the father of Ardashir. So it's been a while, and Kartir is becoming enormously powerful. Not only that, but Kartir is often represented at the king's side in most reliefs that Bahram made, so is showing himself as the right hand of the king in all public displays. And not only that, we know that Kartir is being able to consolidate the hegemonic role of Zoroastrianism in the empire, with Manichaeans, Christians, and non-Orthodox Mazdeans being persecuted across the empire because they don't follow the correct religion that Kartir wants.
Hmm.
And how do we know all this, Sariel?
How indeed?
Well, we know it because Kartir himself tells us.
Oh.
Because he has become so powerful that he can make a bunch of reliefs next to those of the ancient kings.
Oh.
Where he tells us his story and his deeds.
Okay. I mean, that's pretty cool and legit, you know?
Yes, that's why we have a special episode on him on Patreon.
Yep.
Because he was just some guy, and now he is as powerful as the kings, and can show it publicly, and
you
it's
know,
fine.
Normal stuff.
So.
The usual.
Yeah, some people disagree. We'll find out who they are. But for now, Kartir is just as powerful as the king, and is making full use of this. But it looks like Bahram himself is also quite attached to a Yazata in Zoroastrianism, specifically the Yazata Bahram, after which he is named, which is also known as Virethragna in other literature, in different languages, and is sometimes syncretized with Heracles, by the way, so it's god of victory. And Bahram is so favorable towards this god that he names his own son Bahram, so we have three Bahrams in a row. And he also incorporated the wings of the god's bird into his crown, so he has a nice winged crown to remind us all of Bahram the god, not just Bahram the person. So neat. It also looks like he was quite fond of his family, and in a lot of iconography, he tends to show himself, his wife, and his son in a lot of state images, such as coins or reliefs, so that he is showing them as part of this new dynasty. And this is probably also as a way to legitimize his line instead of Narseh's line.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he's showing in the portraits, oh no, look, this is the new royal family, forget about the royal family one generation up. This is what's actually going on. See, I have an heir, I have a wife.
Yeah, don't question.
Everything is going well.
Mm-hmm.
Don't look to the side of the family tree. Just look directly downwards.
Yes. Astute.
And from Al-Masudi, we get not a very flattering picture of Bahram's early reign. We're told that he wasn't very good. We're told that he was dedicated to pleasure and the good life, and he was hunting and partying without paying attention to the state.
Ah. We love that. That is, you know, a mark of a good leader.
Yeah, especially since your only job as king is to just rule. You should at least do that well.
But Umberto, the parties. Who's going to, throw lavish, incredibly fun parties and drink all the alcohol?
Yes. Why
go
do you
hunting?
Care if the peasants are going to suffer?
Yeah.
If we're
I
just having a fun
the
time.
The point of being king is to just do whatever you want and have fun.
That's true.
hello.
That is a common way to go about it. It happens. And Bahram is following this line.
I'm not surprised.
Not only that, but we're told that he gave lands away to his party friends and those who come hunting with him. And he left most of the government to his ministers, which, you know, seems to match a lot with Kartir gaining so much power. Because Bahram just didn't care about ruling, he just wanted to have a fun time. So, yeah, why not devalue the role of king?
Mm.
And this was so bad that a lot of villages started to suffer from this. The economy of the empire started to go a lot worse, and many villages were abandoned across the empire. And we even get a story about this. So let me tell it to you. Because we're told that one day Bahram was off hunting and had a priest along to ask him some questions. Then when night fell, they passed through an abandoned village and they heard some owls. The king then wondered, okay, what are these owls saying?
Because priest, that's a thing.
Do you know owlies? Yes, good. Please tell me what these owls are saying. And the priest said, yep, I totally know what owls are saying. I'm not making this up. And he said, these owls are a male owl courting a female owl. It looks like the female owl is attracted to the male one, but will only marry him if she got 10 abandoned villages as a dowry.
Yes, owl marriage. That's
owl legal marriage, yes.
Long tradition.
Yes, we all know owls are strictly monogamous and will just marry for life.
Uh-huh.
But you need to provide the correct dowry, of course.
Listen, if you haven't been invited to an owl wedding yourself, it's a you problem.
Yes. And, well, the male owl replies to his lady love, well, 10 villages is nothing. If this king keeps up governing how he is, I'm going to be able to give you 1,000 villages. Which sounds a lot like the priest trying to tell Bahram to just do his job and
just
do things.
Listen, this is when someone, quote-unquote, reading your future, just wants to tell you something real badly without having to necessarily face the consequences. So they're like, ah yes, the gods are saying that maybe you should stop being such a prick. And then things will favor
you. You should probably shower more often.
Yeah.
So there we are. Apparently Bahram was so shocked by this revelation, at least in this story, that he turned to rule with justice like his ancestors, rewarding hard work, expelling sycophants, and the kingdom prospered.
Did he?
We have no evidence that he did.
You know, also given the fact that all of this, like, the way you've been narrating this so far has been, we think this happened, we don't have much about this or that, maybe he did this other thing. I'm like, yeah, so I'm gathering that, like, there are not many sources, and this was not someone that lasted long, or made any, you know, important revelations.
Well, we'll find out about what exactly he did. We have a few sources, you know, we had a nice story about owls. We don't get that for the Parthians.
That's true. We don't get anything for the Parthians.
Poor Parthians. They deserve better.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, Sariel.
Yeah.
Time to look outside the Empire. What exists in the world outside the Empire? Well, we're hearing from a new people that we haven't heard from.
Oh, fun.
Because in diplomacy, Bahram received an embassy from the Himyarite kingdom. We've not heard of the Himyarites yet, because this is basically where they're coming to exist. They are people coming from the area of modern Yemen.
Oh, okay.
And it's a really important place for trade, because if any trade is going through Egypt and the Red Sea, they're going to stop there in Yemen, and they become very rich and powerful for being on this trade route. So it's important to have good relations with these people.
Okay.
And, well, apparently they suddenly united this kingdom, and they've sent an embassy to Bahram. We're not really sure what they asked Bahram for, or if it was a request or anything, or if they were just presenting themselves and say, hi, we exist now, pleased to make your acquaintance.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, it looks like Bahram sort of acknowledged their conquest of most of Yemen and said, yep, you're our friends, we can trade and have good relations. And Bahram apparently thought that this was important enough that he commissioned a relief, which is going to be his face of faces, where he shows himself receiving these Himyarite ambassadors. Instead in the Caucasus, it looks like Bahram managed to appoint a friendly child king of Iberia, who was maybe an illegitimate son of his or the son of a powerful noble family.
A friendly child king? Okay, so a friendly king, that is a child. Okay.
Yes, exactly. Not a child-friendly king. Not a king who is not mean to children. I mean, presumably he was also nice enough. He was a child.
Yeah. Yeah. Or a child that is friendly and then he gets to be king.
Yes.
Which, you know,
yes. He is a child. He is also a king. He is also friendly to us. All these things are not necessarily related.
Okay. Understood.
Good. But then Cyrahil, who haven't we heard from in a while?
Rome.
Yes, that is correct.
No, I was hoping you'd be like, no, it's Armenia. Never mind.
No, Armenia is now comfortably governed by Narsé, who's just
doing a good job
because he is capable at it.
Yeah.
So, there was plenty of war because the Romans decided to invade Mesopotamia. Now, there was originally a plan organized by Emperor Aurelian, the restorer of the world, the guy who basically got Rome into one piece again. But he was murdered by his secretary, or at least a murder caused by his secretary. So Emperor Carus took over. But he still decided to continue with his invasion and was quite successful. It looks like they managed to either actually capture Ctesiphon, which hasn't happened since Parthian days, which is not good.
Yeah.
Or possibly, since it was a really quick campaign, they might have just destroyed Seleucia, which was a suburb of Ctesiphon, and not actually conquered the city, just like ravaged the outsides of it.
Mm-hmm.
The part that wasn't in the walls, we're not sure.
Eh.
Either or, it was quick to be a siege. If they did manage to take it that quickly, then things are definitely not going well. But fortunately for us, Cyrahil, do you know what happens to Emperor Carus?
I do not.
He is struck by lightning.
Oh my god! Yeah, I forgot.
It's good times. Possibly murdered, but the sources say struck by lightning.
Listen, that is a good death in general, but also for this podcast, this would give you many points.
Yes, you would get a high score, but alas, we're not rating him. So after being struck by lightning, the Roman force retreats out of Mesopotamia. And well, the army retreating was commanded by Carus' son, Numerian.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like they met in battle with the armies of Narsé, who was king of Armenia and was just stopping them from escaping with all the loot.
Yep.
And according to only a single source, which makes it not terribly reliable, it looks like Narsé himself killed the emperor Numerian and had him stuffed like Valerian.
Oh. We want to repeat.
This happened. We don't know.
Yeah,
that will be
I doubt
cool,
it. Because
hey.
This sounds a lot like, oh yeah, I want to redo what my ancestor did, you know. But like,
yeah, it could. I mean, you know, Narsé's father did this, so it would make sense that he would want to imitate his very important father.
Hmm.
But the fact that he would have caught another Roman emperor, maybe. I mean, the Roman sources say that Numerian just had an eye infection and then died from that.
But also the Romans would not be able to live with themselves knowing that this happened to them twice. So.
Yeah, we don't know. It's mysterious. It's kind of, who knows what's going on.
We can say it happened.
Yes. And who hasn't reacted to this invasion?
Well, from our empire, you mean?
Yes. Who haven't we heard from fighting in this war?
Well, the uncle, right?
Well, Narsé managed to kill a Roman emperor, if you believe that source. So he did a good job.
Yeah, no, okay. So, oh, right, so we're to... Oh my gosh, I was so stupid. I thought our current king did this.
No.
You know, oh, okay, yeah, no. So where is our king, actually?
Yes, that is kind of a problem. Our king is not only nowhere to be seen, but at the end, he sent gifts to the new emperor Diocletian to conclude a peace.
But we won? What?
In this peace, he sent gifts, surrendered Western Armenia to a Roman Arsacid candidate, and gave up some border regions in Mesopotamia to the Romans.
Wait, what are we doing? Why? What are we doing?
Well, we'll find out. There are a couple of reasons for this.
Are there?
Yes.
Truly? Honestly?
Well, firstly, we're weakening Uncle Narsé because we're giving half of his kingdom away to the Romans.
Why are we doing this?
So he can't overthrow us, can he, if he has only half a kingdom left?
I want to cry.
Yeah, Narsay's going to be a lot more annoyed now, but he has less of a kingdom.
Come to provoke the very smart, very capable, very strong uncle.
Yes. Also, for those keeping count, Valerian is probably going to be ping-ponged over to the Romans now. Move Valerian to Rome. We'll see when he comes back to us. Hopefully soon. But okay, why were things going so badly in the West? Why is Bahram not reacting? Why is he just surrendering without a fight, even though Narsay won a battle for him?
Yeah.
Why is he just giving away half a kingdom?
I do not understand.
Well, there was a massive war in the East that was not going very well at all. And we need all our resources to deal with that.
I do not care. This makes no sense.
Because there was a certain Hormizd in the East who was fighting against Bahram. Who was Hormizd? We have two options. Option one is he was the brother of Bahram. And he was aiming for the throne. We mentioned that he might have had a brother.
Yeah.
This is a civil war for the throne. Hormizd wants the throne. Alternatively, it could be that it's a Kushano Sassanid king with that name that had been a vassal to Shapur II and now was deciding to unite the Kushano Sassanid Empire with the rest of the Sassanids. So trying to conquer everything starting from his powerful kingdom in the east.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, but we know that whoever this Hormizd was, he was calling himself Kushan King of Kings in a clear challenge to the Persian supremacy in the west. So he was trying to take over all the empire and destroy it.
Yeah. Intentions were clear, even if his identity was not. Yeah.
And all this was happening while the Romans were emerging from the crisis of the 3rd century and invading Mesopotamia. So given the choice between the Romans punching us a bit and losing the whole empire, Bahram thought, I would rather not lose the whole empire. Fine, Romans, have whatever. I have this thing I need to take care of.
Fair-ish?
Yeah.
I still think, you know. Was her uncle in on this, or like...
He was very probably not in on this.
Yeah.
He is not happy about this. He is not a happy bunny at all. So, yeah, poor Narsay is just trying his best. He's just trying to be competent, but no.
Yeah, I'm not even mad. Like, I just, you know, I'm like, well, if you're gonna do this, which, like, honestly, it does make sense to do knowing the context. Like, at least tell him. I feel like he should be privy to this, so he's not...
Well, but if he knew, he would maybe try and stop Bahram from giving away half his kingdom.
No, if he knew, and he knew that, like, we're struggling with 30 things, he might try and usurp now.
Yeah, that's also
even though he would have to deal with it, like, after that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It would be his problem.
Yeah, but generally, Bahram definitely does not want to be usurped, because that ends with you losing your eyes or your head, depending on how merciful your uncle is feeling.
Yeah. But, like, he's not going to be happy.
No, he is not at all. He's going to be flipping furious. Also, by the way, Serial, remember those religious persecutions we were doing?
Oh, God, yeah. Why were we doing those?
Yeah, it turns out the east of the empire, which is also in a war, starts to have a bit of a civil war because the religiously persecuted are rebelling because they don't enjoy being religiously persecuted.
Yeah, because it's not fun, it turns out.
This rebellion is quickly suppressed, but it doesn't help the general vibe that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you think this civil war with the East goes?
Bad.
Goes better than you'd expect, to be fair. We did abandon the Roman front entirely.
We did
but
give
at
up
least...
on other things to be able to focus on this. So, like, at least I guess it paid off somehow. Somewhat.
Yeah, there is a long, brutal war against this Hormizd, but finally Bahram manages to take over and defeat him and install a new Kushano Sassanid king. So that's good. Not only that, but to ensure security of the region, Bahram the king makes his own son, Prince Bahram, king of Sakistan.
Okay.
Which is basically the second largest kingdom in the empire. Basically guarding the eastern frontier. It's basically the mirror of Armenia.
Yeah. Honestly, he's doing much better than I expected.
Have been worse.
You know.
The Roman front does not look good.
I was set up to hate him, but I'm like, I guess.
He could have done worse, could have done a lot better, though.
Yeah.
But also the fact that Bahram is making his son king of Sakistan sort of also indicates him as heir, because it's the second largest kingdom, and if we've agreed that Armenia isn't the kingdom of the successor anymore, Bahram himself was king of Sakistan under his father. Now that he makes his own son king of Sakistan, that's indicating who he wants to succeed. Mm-hmm. So, okay, there we go. He's finally managed to succeed. And, well, at that point, we don't hear too much about him, because Bahram himself dies in 293 without reports of foul play. Can you guess who succeeds him?
Well, I don't know anymore, because do we, like, without a war, I don't think that his uncle has a chance. So probably his son, right?
Can you guess who is going to be absolutely furious that his son is succeeding?
Yeah, well, yeah, the uncle, because he was promised twice.
Yes, pretty much.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice. Well, I guess, you know.
Yeah. So, we're going to have a Bahram III next episode, but Narseh is going to be absolutely furious that he has been passed over for the succession twice,
and
he's lost,
like,
half the king of
Armenia,
and he's doing all he can. He is in his 70s by now.
Yeah.
The man wants his kingdom, please.
Yeah, at this point, I don't know if he'll get that. But, you know, I guess
we'll find out. We'll see next episode if Narseh manages to finally get the throne he was promised so long ago.
Yeah.
Or if it just ends with him dying unfulfilled. We'll see. What are your predictions, Serial? Do you think he makes it, or do you think he fails?
I swear to you, if he makes it for, like, a year and then dies, I'm gonna be so mad. But, like, it also, like, now it's a question of, because I was like, well, he is decent and reliable and, like, actually prepared to rule, so maybe he won't, like, put the entire empire at risk just to be king. But at this point, I'm like, I don't know anymore if he has the patience for that.
Yeah, also, Narseh has been on the Western Front, and it's the front that Bahram has entirely neglected. He has seen the religious power of the king be destroyed. The Kartir can just make inscriptions next to the kings, and everybody's fine with it. You know, Narseh has seen the empire crumble from the times of his father, who managed to destroy three Roman emperors and bring a golden age.
Yeah.
There are things that need to be sorted.
Yes.
So, yeah, if you want to see how that goes, join us for next episode.
Hey, this was very short.
Yes.
I don't... But it was better than I expected.
Could have been a lot worse, but, you know, not ideal. So, are you ready to rate Bahram II, Serial?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's go. Our first category is final moments. How interesting was his death? Disappearing from the history books without any
non-existent.
Notice.
Non-existent.
Yeah. Nice.
Boring.
Sadly. Round zero.
Surprising for him, like in my book.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Yeah. So, I think zeros all round give us 0 and a 0 is a 0 out of 10 for final moments. Our next category is battle hardness. How good was he at war and fighting? Well, we have two sides here.
Yep.
We have the Western campaign, where things are going terribly.
Yep.
In the West,
we were winning and then we gave up a bunch of stuff for some reason.
Yeah, the Romans have managed to either sack Ctesiphon or at least the outskirts of Ctesiphon.
Yeah, that's...
Which is not good. You don't want your capital to be sacked. That's what Parthians do.
Yeah.
We were meant to have solved this problem, but apparently not. The Romans are back. Why?
They can't stay down.
In the West, there's basically no resistance given to the Romans. Narseh manages to fight them while they're retreating and seems to have won a victory. We don't know how important it was, but, you know, clearly it wasn't a victory that destroyed the whole Roman army, because otherwise we would have gotten a better peace, but it was apparently enough to save face, let's call it.
Yeah. Some consolation.
Yeah. Bad times. We had to abandon territory. That's not good. In the East, we fought a religious uprising and won. That's positive, I guess. And then we had this long, grueling war with this Hormizd, which took quite a few years to suppress. And then finally we managed to win, but it was sort of like status quo before the war.
Yeah.
So it wasn't anything amazing or breathtaking. It was just a long, slow thing that ended up in us having what we had before, which is not ideal. So, yeah, battle hardness, not great. Not at all.
Some of it, you know.
You know, credit where credit's due. He did suppress a rebellion.
Yeah.
He did win against Hormizd. Do we want to give him some credit for Narsay's victory in the West? We could
try. That's not him.
But it is in his name.
But it's Narsay not
is
him.
Fighting for the Empire.
If we were making this makes me think that he's never going to become king, because if we were making an episode about him, then this would go to him.
You know, we can apply things to multiple people.
No, it happens.
Like, if we were doing an Augustus episode, you're going to give him credit for what Agrippa did.
No.
If you had an Agrippa episode.
He doesn't deserve that. Agrippa was too good for him. I'm sorry, but disagree. I'm not giving Augustus I'm sorry.
Poor Augustus. And his damn knee. But yeah, so Bahram, I think I'm going to give him a 3. I think it's 1 point for suppressing the rebellion joint with Narsay's victory. I can give him some credit, and then 2 points for defeating Hormizd in the east. And you could say that, you know, instead of losing 2 wars, he just accepted to lose 1 badly and win the other 1.
Yeah.
Which I guess is a reasonable distribution of resources if you know you can't win both. So I think a 3. It's not great, but he did try.
Yeah, that is fair enough, actually.
And how about you? So what do you think?
Yeah, no, I think I agree with you.
3 as well?
Okay. Yeah.
So with a 3 and a 3, we get a 6 out of 20 for battle hardness. Our next category is scheminess. How good was he at plots and manipulations? We have some thing for this. He clearly has been working with Cartier to succeed instead of his uncle.
Yeah.
He is clearly giving away more royal power for that. There's a nice quid pro quo there. Other scheminess, there isn't too much, but basically in losing the war with Rome, he is giving away mostly Narsay's kingdom. So he's not really losing that much personally, but he is weakening a potential rival. So that's clever.
It is clever. I don't know if it's, like, schemey.
I mean, it's not entirely.
I mean, you know, he did do that without telling him, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much. It's not that they agreed and they're like, oh, no, this is the best thing for the Empire. He was just like, well, you won't be able to rebel easily if I take part of your kingdom, will I?
Don't mind if I do. Yoink.
Yeah. So, yeah. I feel like it's not huge scheminess, but it deserves a little bit there.
Yeah, true.
I'm thinking a couple points.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think 2 points works. And are you following as well?
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I have been convinced.
Nice. So with a 2 and a 2, we get a 4 out of 20 for scheminess. Our next category is shock factor. How shocking was this man?
Honestly, more than I thought.
There was a bit going on.
I did not expect him to, like, you know, rule at all.
Yeah, fair enough. So, well, he does a lot of that is shocking.
Yes.
He gives Cartier so much power. Cartier is supreme judge of the Empire. He is equal to the kings. He was
Why are we doing this?
Well, because otherwise Narsay was going to succeed. Nobody wants that, do they?
Oh, God.
Poor Narsay.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why keep him? I don't think.
Well, Sarah, because otherwise Bahram wouldn't be able to party just as much.
Incompetent.
Yeah.
Though more competent than I thought, but yeah.
So he gives Cartier unprecedented power. There are persecutions not only of Manichaeans anymore, but Christians and non-Orthodox Mazdeans. That's not fun.
I hate that.
There are so many persecutions that they rebel because they're done with this.
Yeah.
So that's not great.
Nobody likes that.
Bahram abandons the west of the Empire to fight a war in the east, but if you're a citizen living in Ctesiphon, the Romans are just rampaging through your land and Where's the king? Oh, the king's somewhere else. Like,
ah, fun.
Then why do we need one?
Yeah.
So, that's not good. That's pretty bad.
Why do we even have one of those?
Yeah, why do we have a king if they're not going to do anything? Well, hereditary politics.
Hmm.
So, I don't think it's the highest shock factor ever, but there is an amount of stuff there.
An amount, for sure.
He is doing things. So, yeah, let me think. The fact that he's giving away so much power.
That peace treaty, whatever the hell it was with Rome, why?
Yes.
Why? Just...
Yeah.
I know that, easier. Like, yeah, that the Empire is in trouble somewhere else, but, like, seriously.
Yeah, also, the Romans weren't fighting again. They just left.
Yeah, so you could just freaking, you know, this is so stupid. Like, we won, and then it's like, hey, by the way, wait, no, don't run away just yet. Here's a gift.
Here's half of Armenia. It's like, oh, what? Okay, cool, I guess.
So the Romans lose, and they're like, oh, neat. We get to go home and, like, triumph, I guess.
Yeah, cool. Good.
Ridiculous. Like, yeah, that positively
was,
unbelievable.
That was not good. So, yeah. Shocking, I would say. Let me think. I'd say 3 points for the fact that he gives away most of the king's religious power into someone else. That's no longer yours. And I'd say a couple points for the war in the West being handled badly.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd add an extra point for the fact that he's apparently just not interested in governing and is just giving power to others to rule and just enjoying himself and having a fun time and just giving presents to people and the economy suffering overall.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think I'm going to go with a 6 for shock factor. How about you?
That's high. I'm mostly shocked that he did as much as he did. But it was kind of a disaster. I think I'll go with a 5.
Okay.
Just for, you know, for the things we've discussed. Mostly, like, 4 of those 5 points are because of the Roman thing.
Okay, fair.
And a 5th because of the religious persecution.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah. Not that I think it only deserves 1 point, but, you know, in the comparison of things.
Yeah, sure.
5 and you're 6.
I'm actually going to go up to 7 because I didn't think of the persecutions that much. I think I'm going to go for more. I think the persecutions are bad. He gives away religious power. He fails at the War of the Rome. He is just a mess of a person.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's fair. That's fair.
Okay. So with a 7 and a 5, he gets a 12 out of 20 for shock factor. Our next category is Aaron Shine. How good was he for the Empire in general and Iran in particular?
Well.
Not good. Not good, Sarah.
Turns out.
Not at all. Because if you just look at it on a map, we've lost bits of Armenia and bits of Mesopotamia. That's not good.
Yeah, when you give away, like, part of your empire, turns out it's not good for your empire.
No,
you know,
that's not
shock.
Helpful.
Big shock.
And on the downside, we're told that the economy is doing terribly. He is mishandling the empire. A bunch of villages are being abandoned. You know, that's what his ancestors had done. So much work to, like, populate Mesopotamia, make sure the agriculture worked and everything worked fine. He is just entirely neglecting it.
God, I hate him.
Yes, he's the worst. I mean, he's not actually the worst. There are worse people, but still, he is pretty bad.
Yeah, I'm so done.
So he does all that, and then in the east, he fights a war that is basically fought to a standstill. He doesn't really gain anything from it. He just fights a lot and loses a lot of resources. Mm. He is persecuting people in his empire.
Don't you love pointless wars? Those are my favorites.
That's not good at all.
Where people die, resources are lost, and nothing is gained. Yay.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Which, you know, there's a point to make of, like, how every war is like this, but... Yeah, not even, like, he didn't even get himself to be, like, richer or something. Or, like, he didn't even benefit himself. So, which is,
yeah,
you know,
just, no,
the lowest
bad.
Point of a war.
I mean, in fairness, he didn't start the war, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. As positives, he got an embassy from the Himyarites, and they thought he was worth talking to. So that's good, I guess.
Right, because they are the hottest new... kids in town.
Yeah, they're there, they're doing stuff. That's nice. Royal power has been weakened. That's bad.
Yeah.
Under Bahram the First, the religious establishment was making itself into a parallel nobility, but only starting. Yeah. Under Bahram the Second, it can fully consolidate this position. They're not leaving anymore.
Yeah.
Something you could have reversed it after Bahram the First, but not now. Now it's too far. Mm.
I am uncomfortable with that.
Yeah. It's not good.
Mm.
I'm hovering between a 1 and a 2.
Yeah.
I don't.
You said 5 is like no effect, right? Or no, like, no evil, no...
Yeah, 5 is no evil, no good. Better. But, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, pretty much everything that could go wrong has gone wrong. Like, geographically, worse. Economically, worse. Like, uprising-wise, like, yeah, exactly. Socially and, like, as in, like, the happiness of the people and stuff, worse. Just, I'm giving him a 1. And he should be grateful. Because worse things will come, says the Bible. So, I'm not going for a 0, but...
I don't think a 0, because, again, the Empire still exists.
Yeah.
Good, I guess. You didn't do nothing. The Empire is still around. You did win that war in the East. That was, you know, you could have lost that, but...
You could have, yeah.
So, yeah, I think I'm going to go with a 1 as well. So, with a 1 and a 1, we get a 2 out of 20 for Aaron Shine. Our next category is Face of Faces. What do you think this man looked like?
Oh.
I'll send you his crown. It is a good crown, to be fair.
Oh, yeah. I get to include it. Okay.
Okay, so Cyril has finished their drawing. Let me pick it up and I will describe it to you all.
It's something.
That's nice. I like that. Very good. So, what we have is Bahram himself, dressed in lovely robes, the pants. And he has a nice crown with a poof and some wings at the back of it. He has a beard and the long wavy hair we've come accustomed to. And he is raising his left arm up to the air, looking towards the sky as he pours wine into his mouth, having a fun time being a party boy, while he waves away an individual with a sword pointing at him, which I assume is his uncle.
Yes.
Who really, really would like to please be on the throne now, and he's like, he's qualified for this job, please, please just give me
but
the job.
But partying! It's more important.
But partying, yes.
Than your empire.
Yeah. Not great. Narsay looks furious. We'll see. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens to him. So yeah. If any of you want to see this image, you can go to the episode notes down below or go to our website in Sarah's portrait gallery. Or you can go on Discord if you're a patron. And now let me show Sarah what he actually looked like in his own depictions. And we get a relief because, hooray, it's relief season.
It's relief season.
This is him receiving the Himyarite expedition. And you can tell they're Himyarites because they have a bunch of cool camels.
Ooh. Oh, this is really cool.
Nice.
I'm going to have to give him a high score and I don't want to.
Yeah. He doesn't deserve it as a person, but it's a
the
good
The hair is so
relief.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's so flowy. So he's wearing this cool crown with wings at the sides and the poof like covered by fabric on the top. And then his hair is like flowing locks in the wind on the sides. There's also the flowing part of the crown that I guess is still like reminiscent of a diadem.
Yeah, I guess it's
behind
the
him.
Of a diadem.
He's riding a horse on the left side, looking to the right, with really like flowy pants too and like decorations and stuff. And
quite good.
The horse also has armor and I don't know, it's really cool. And then he's looking to the ambassadors coming to greet him with like different kinds of clothing, which is nice because then you can like compare it to the ones that a king is wearing and be like, ah yeah, these are different people from a different culture.
Yeah.
They have these like long tunic like things and head coverings.
Yeah.
And they have camels and a horse. Which is really cool. And swords and stuff. Is this like water damage? Like the level of the
I
water
can't
somewhere?
I can't tell what it is. I feel like it might be that there's like... Because there's like a channel that goes through the middle of the image. And it feels like water. I don't know.
It feels like the...
About it.
The
but
level
it feels like
of,
water was
yeah
flowing through it. But I don't think so based on where it is, but yeah, I could be wrong.
I don't know. Anybody, maybe something carved through or something had to pass at some point, and I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
Anyway, really cool. But
looks good.
And also contemporary.
Yes, I would give it Bahram himself making it.
Like an 8.
An 8? Yeah, I think that's fair. I would agree.
Yeah, glad we agree.
So with an 8 and an 8, he gets a 4 out of 5 for Face of Faces.
I give it an 8 reluctantly.
Yes, fair. And that brings us to our next category, which is lengthiness. How long do you think this man reigned?
Too long. Gave so
that
much
is
to
correct,
the
yes.
And he even just died, like, you know, on his own.
Yep, natural causes.
I'm going to say, I do not have a reference, but I'll say, like, between 5 and 10 years.
Read quite a bit more than that, actually.
Why? I was like, yes. Please let it not be more than 10 years.
He had plenty of time to make things go bad and entrench a new anti-monarchy system.
Mm.
He ruled for 19 years.
Oh, God. So double what I said.
Yeah.
Damn.
From 274
disgusting.
To 293.
I am not okay.
Yeah.
I hate that.
Not a good time.
Oof.
So yeah, divide that by 10. That gives us a 1.9 out of 5 for lengthiness. And that brings us to the final score, which is to say a 29.9 out of 100, which places him between Mithridates the IV beneath him and Phraates the III just above, which is fair enough, honestly. I think he is bad, but he's not like so supremely bad.
Yeah.
That he's just like, oh, well, gross. But yeah, I think he is not great. But he did a better job than his father, at least, at being notable. Definitely a worse job for the Empire.
Yeah.
But that brings us to our final question, which is to ask, is he persecutory enough? Is he abandoning power enough? Is he just terrible enough to be a Shahanshah? Or is he just a Shahanshah?
I don't care for him enough.
No, I think he is not so over the top bad. I think he is just like banal bad.
Yeah.
He was just a dumb kid who just partied too much and didn't pay attention to the Empire. And then everything went to hell and he is just making things worse. He's just extremely short-sighted and just saying, it's good for now. Who cares what will happen next? It's helpful. Yeah. So yeah, sorry, Bahram, but you can go off into the desert, meet your father, Bahram, and tell him, hey, you have a third Bahram coming up. Let's see if he'll do any better. That'll be interesting.
Because we could not. Turns out we're just, like, proving your father right. That you were never meant to rule.
Not at all. So that is the end of today's episode. Thank you for listening. And yeah, we hope you'll join us next time for Bahram the Third. Let's see if he does better. Let's see what happens to Narsé. Will Narsé ever get to rule? Will he just die in obscurity? Will he be killed somehow? You will find out his destiny in the next episode, the second guarantee.
Destiny.
Yes. So yeah, in the meantime, if you'd like to support us, you can join us on Patreon, where you get access to a bunch of extra episodes. Do you want to hear more about Cartier? His life is coming up at the end of April. You want to hear about Mani? He's coming up in May. Do you want to hear about Ashoka the Great? Mithridates the Great? Alcibiades? They're all extra episodes. They're fun. Join us. It'll be cool.
Yeah. You know, if you didn't have enough of us already and you want more and you cannot wait until we put out the next episode, go there.
Yeah.
There's more.
If instead you'd rather not support us monetarily, that's fine. But we appreciate if you could give us a review on your podcast app of choice so more people know that we exist and more people can join the group, which is always nice. And yes, so without any further ado, we hope you have a lovely week and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.